And you're listening to Ulm Rep Radio here at Ulm 2013. Welcome all. It's time for a look at the news. Bradley Manning has been found not guilty of aiding the enemy, but guilty of 20 other charges in total, including theft and computer fraud, and counts under the Espionage Act in the United States. Sentencing is scheduled to begin tomorrow. In a long-awaited public response to the death of Aaron Swartz, who committed suicide in January after being charged with hacking into MIT computers and illegally downloading millions of academic journal articles, MIT officials today released an internal review of university actions, saying administrators never targeted the 26-year-old internet activist and committed no wrongdoing. The report, however, also raises concerns about university policies and whether MIT should have been more actively involved. These bulletins. The fields are very slippery. We've had torrential rains throughout Ulm. Be careful when you're walking around. Track number 2 needs to be completely rebuilt. We need 40 volunteers to head to track number 2 as quickly as possible. But again, carefully, because the fields are very slippery. The terror threat level in the Netherlands is still substantial. Keep listening. Ulm Rep continues.
Okay. Thank you so much for the news. Hello, welcome this evening to a new program we've devised. It's called Righteous Ranting, and to my left, there's a little French fellow sitting who's aching to introduce himself. So, go ahead, sir.
Oh, hi. I'm Jeremy. Jeremy Zimmerman, co-founder of La Quadrature du Net, French-based organization helping citizens to participate in public debate about fundamental freedoms online. We worked very hard against ACTA and for global copyright reform, net neutrality, and that kind of shit. We have a tea house on La Quadrature du Homme's village, located about in the middle of the Area W, Allée Marie Curie, where we would be glad to offer hot, nice tea to anyone passing by and wanting to have a chat on those issues or anything. And thanks for the invitation.
Okay. And over there, there's some Icelandic gnome sitting.
I'm Samar McCarthy from International Multimedia Institute and various other hats of various descriptions. Over the last couple of years, we've been working on trying to improve different laws in Iceland and elsewhere regarding things such as access to information, whistleblower protection, source protection, and so on. So just generally trying to fix all of the broken information laws, that is to say, laws regulating information in the world. Well, it turns out it's a slightly difficult task, but, you know, we're trying.
So, okay. Basically, the theme of these programs will be digital civil rights, current events, and lots of political ranting. There's also just arrived a somewhat slow-moving creature who may also be able to introduce himself. Go ahead, Vinay.
Hi, I'm Vinay Gupta of the Hexert Project, and I'm an old-school cypherpunk once upon a time.
Okay. Talking about old times, I'm going to throw in some music. One of my favorite German 8-bit creations on the Commodore 64. And if Andreas can handle that, okay.
Safe house thing. Yeah. Yes, it
clause of Manning. Okay, yeah, because if you don't like it, you can...
I'll try to talk around the details of my involvement, but not, you know, I mean, it's common knowledge that I was there.
Okay.
Yeah. And generally, I just want to avoid the entire WikiLeaks drama issue, but you know, the facts are fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, you know, I'd rather not say anything bad about the police, but publicly.
Okay, but then I will just ask some personal questions if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Okay. And basically, guys, as far as I'm concerned, it will be a somewhat organic discussion. You've done this at two camps already and violated any rule for making radio. And I actually got told by a German that he pretty much liked the talk shows because they sounded like a stream of consciousness to him.
I don't expect that from you.
Well, it can be kind of a stream of subconsciousness.
So you're unconscious at the moment?
Oh, yes, I am.
Stream of unconsciousness.
You want some of this Afghan hash?
How long do we have on this track?
2 minutes, but we can cut it short.
No, I'm just... We've got to put some bright clothes on in that case.
Even with Deppin.
Shall we slowly fade out? Yeah. Smari.
Yeah.
Okay, that was the German artist Sputnik Booster from his rather old album Robot Science, the song Deutschland muss sterben, and it's a Slime cover. Oh, and by the way, my name is Walter, and our sound technician is Andreas, the ever wonderful, huggable Frisian bloke.
That's a good one.
So much for my capabilities to run iTunes. Anyway, serious question here.
Operator software, you mean?
Oh, shut up, open source hippie.
Starts the copyright.
It's Creative Commons. That's hippie enough to me, anyway. Mm. Talking about subversive, Smari, you were about during the WikiLeaks Icelandic bunker saga.
Yes, I was.
And of course, you've heard the news.
Yes.
What's your take on that?
Well, first thing is Bradley Manning was found not guilty of aiding the enemy, which is really, really important and substantial, especially given the fact that the judge previously refused to reject that issue. So in a sense, that might be considered to be good news. On the other hand, being found guilty of 20 other counts, or 19, depending on which media outlet you're reading or watching, does not actually sound very good, and you know, up to 136 years in prison for those several counts. But I don't know. I mean, Obviously, he should have been acquitted of everything, because this is, the kind of act that generally is...
Would that even be possible since he pled guilty on several counts?
Well, okay, so he's pled guilty on four counts, that is true. So, fair, maybe those. But on the other hand, I mean, that's a strategic guilt admission, it's the entire play of the American court system. But, just having been a part of that entire, the back end of processing some of the leaks that came from him, I'm tempted to think that, what we're getting out of this as a society is so important that, whatever happens next, he's firmly established himself as a kind of important figure in history. And, well, what that means in practice, he's going to spend the rest of his life in prison. I hope not, It's hard.
If I may, I think we should be extremely careful not to call this like half a bad news, not so bad news, and so on, because I think that this is the spin that want to get that is being pushed out of it. It's not a good news at all. Bradley Manning is a political prisoner in the U.S. He's a victim of this repression of whistleblowers. He's done something of infinite courage for us all, and we should be very, very careful with the words here. Right. It's a very, very, very sad news indeed, and it's the symbol of the decadence of the legal system of the U.S. It's the symbol of this sectarian machine going wrong, like a cancer, paralyzing the whole country and important parts of the world. This is very, very grave thing indeed.
Yes, but that said, there is the thing that the sentencing hasn't happened yet, and we don't know what that's actually going to be.
Yes,
so,
yes, he must go free. Whatever happens, he must go free.
Absolutely.
Whenever this will be, whenever Bradley Manning will be free, the question is when. Will Obama be courageous enough to do it himself, or should it be
Doubtful.
Somebody else? But he will go free. There's no question about that. I mean, it has to happen.
The UK-based freedom of speech human rights organization Article 19 has already called for Obama to pardon him.
Smari, when you said that, I agree with you. The impact is of global scale, concerns every one of us, and it's the future of our society that is at stake here. Does it mean that you support WikiLeaks?
Yes, absolutely. I support what they've been doing. I don't always agree with how they've done things, but I do support the aims and the objectives of the organization.
I'm personally very much impressed by what is happening now in the transition of WikiLeaks, that at first was a wiki, then tried to accompany the release of the documents, then partnered with media organization, then coordinated partnership between media organization, and who is now taking an extremely active role in even going up to defending the whistleblowers themselves. And I think that this is a major evolution of the whole, wouldn't want to call it a movement, but of the impact that is being made by WikiLeaks and its followers. And I think, yes, this is what is happening today.
Slightly different question, given that what happened to Manning over 300, almost 3 years in isolation, would amount to torture by many definitions. And I think we haven't heard Vinay much yet. How much is left of the United States as a beacon on a hill, as a shining example of a democratic society?
Well, that depends very much who you ask.
I'm asking you.
There's a critique from the right, which is that America is still recovering from 9/11. That the human rights frameworks that were breached, for example, when they stopped observing the Geneva Convention, when they started monitoring their own population, that this stuff will work its way out through the courts and gradually the excesses of war will be recovered. This is the Japanese internment in World War II. They just rounded people up and threw them in camps, and eventually the legal system recovered and the splinter worked its way back out. The critique from the left is that America has never been a shining city on the hill, that it was founded in a genocide, and that they've successively screwed different parts of their population into the ground through slavery or whatever else, and all that anybody has gotten out of America, they've taken from it by the sword. The problem is that both of these critiques are true. Right? America is so big and so complex that almost any perspective on it can find some historical backup. The real question isn't what happened to it in the past, but what it's going to do in the future. And the choice is very clearly between becoming a kind of surveillance superpower where we just assume that all electronic devices are American property, and a situation where the American state withdraws from that position and establishes some kind of relationship with the world rather than seeking to rule it.
Well, the question was actually more or less about the future, because regardless of this left-right critique, even if you take into account genocide and all that, for many people outside the US, it has always been this shining city on a hill.
Only if you're old.
Or well, anybody under the age. Cold, I'm 40, yes, yeah, I'm
right.
Old.
42, right? So we remember the Cold War, we remember mutually assured destruction. Yeah. If you are 20 years old, America has only ever been this tyrannical superstate that bombed the hell out of people on the other side of the world, the drones.
Or just the source of MTV and other atrocities.
Right? If you don't remember the Soviets, America doesn't really make any sense.
If you're slightly older than the two of you are, then you're going to at least have gotten the tail end of Vietnam, where basically the same kind of atrocities as we've seen over the last decade were played out in a much grander scale, actually. Although the kind of softer human rights, that is to say, you know, Vietnam was mostly about killing people en masse. The last decade has been not directly as brutal in terms of killing people en masse, but has been way more brutal in terms of subjugating other fundamental rights such as freedom of expression, you know, and just secrecy and whatnot, torture, you know. So
I think the students beaten to death during the Vietnam protests might disagree on that, sir.
Sure, but what I mean is that you know, if we're talking in terms of body count, this decade has been a lot better.
Why would we?
Because body count is actually a fairly good way of measuring how bad things are.
But who cares about the body count of Iraq and Afghanistan these days?
Oh, I do.
Well, I do too. But what's the effect?
I'm pretty sure the guy who
international
was,
policy.
I'm pretty sure the guy who was found guilty just now of having shown us how bad those two wars are cares a great deal about the body counts of those two wars.
So one of the things that I think we need to think about is the history of previous whistleblowers. You know, Wilford Binney and, you know, the recent NSA guys pre-Snowden all lived in freedom. They didn't get busted, they didn't get thrown in solitary confinement, they didn't get the book thrown at them. The guy who leaked the Pentagon Papers, his name escapes.
Yeah, Daniel Ellsberg.
Ellsberg.
Yeah, right? You know, lived out his life in comparative peace and comfort. So,
he's not dead yet, thankfully.
True, right? But the fact is that the change in American domestic policy, the way that internal security has been enforced, is completely congruent with them abandoning the Geneva Convention. Mm. There was a time when the Americans, by and large, played by their own rule book a good chunk of the time. And right now, the gloves are completely off in a way that's extremely disturbing, even to right-wing Americans. Like, this is not the way this is meant to be done.
Oh, I don't think anyone at this table will disagree. I will disagree, although I'm supposed to be moderating discussion, on the gloves being completely off.
Well,
the next step is assassinating people. They've already
done that.
Yeah, they do that. Three,
right?
Drones.
Yeah, drones.
So let's classify assassination, right? For it to be an assassination rather than an act of war, there need to be a certain set of criteria met. The Americans are certainly assassinating people, including some of their own citizens. What we haven't seen them do is start assassinating people who are not Muslim fundamentalists in armed conflicts. So there's still one line to cross, which is starting to put people like Snowden in body bags. But once they've crossed that line, you know, the next stopping point is concentration camps.
Just to come back to not assassinating Muslims in conflict zones, I'm pretty sure the journalists who were shot in Iraq in the famous helicopter video now known as collateral murder, sure, they may well have been Muslim, but their religion played no role in the fact that they were killed that way. there it was journalists being killed by and assassinated, essentially.
Well,
not necessarily known to be journalists and targeted in that way, but still, they, you know, there's no accounting for the way in which the rule of armed laws of armed conflict are being breached there.
Well, agreed, right? I mean, we're in a situation where the Americans were certainly not playing ball in that situation. But there is still another line, which is where you actually single people out, make a case, prove the case, get somebody to sign a death warrant, and then go and off them. Right? There's an additional mechanism there, which is either not currently in play or is in play very, very quietly.
So I'm going to throw in some music.
Shall we make the segue with the technology? Because, I mean, armed conflicts are... It's not my. Yeah. I mean, I don't.
Ah, okay. Right. We should we should try and get to Snowden from here.
Yeah, yeah. I want to jump on what you said. About the devices.
Yeah.
Should. What's the hashtag for the radio show?
No idea.
Omroep.
Hash OHMROEP.
Omroep.
Roep.
Yeah. ROEP.
Roep?
Yeah. ROE.
Yeah.
What is a roep?
Dutch word for.
Roep. Omroep. Omroep.
ROEP.
No, it's a. Fire. Yeah.
You have a transition ready?
Yeah, just read on so we get any.
Okay. You have a transition? About technology and
going.
Or maybe I have something to say. Just I don't know.
We'll technology say, would be.
I'll interrupt you like a bastard.
We want to try and get to Snowden. That's where the beat is.
I'll jump in on military artifacts at some point because we really need to talk about the dissolution of the state. Don't worry, that makes sense to Jeremy because he was there. Enrique.
Yes, does it make sense to me?
Is it supposed to?
Yeah. The dissolution of the state.
This is really fun.
That's your phone.
That's not mine. The deck of...
It's almost in sync. It's almost in sync with the music. It works very well. I think it's part of the music. It's a good moment for a transition.
There's still more than a minute left of this.
Yeah, but that's the moment where you mix it. Where's the break?
Fine.
Yeah, we need to rant more.
Yeah, we need more ranting.
Yeah, the problem is we all agree with each other.
Yeah, but that's always the problem with sessions like this.
Yeah, maybe I'll put on my fascist hat and we can take it from that angle.
Yeah, I think you should.
I used to work at the Pentagon, so I know this stuff up
really?
Close.
Yeah. What did you do there?
Stuff.
Ah, sorry.
You might want to introduce the asking. Fact that you're putting your fascist hat on.
So sorry for asking. Don't send the drones, please.
I spent last year working for UK Ministry of Defence on cybersecurity.
Oh, but so did I, right?
Well, a bit of it, right? But you know, yeah. Who are the foxes? Who are the hounds?
Now mute and ook op een gegeven moment de muziek uit, want hij springt waarschijnlijk door naar het volgende nummer nodig.
Okay, that was Utopia by Bertie Cox from his album The Signal. Oh, and by the way, the noise you hear in the background is Brenno's decked. Brenno, you idiot, fetch your decked. Vina, you mentioned working for the Pentagon in the past, and you're the hexagird guy. talking on a regular basis about fascism as the only solution for the predicament we are in. I'm not going to call you a fascist, but that's a pretty interesting take on that.
Well, let's make a distinction here. China's one-child family policy was imposed by brute force. It was a blatant violation of everybody's human rights. It took roughly 300 million Chinese out of the future, and as a result, China didn't undergo mass starvation and social collapse in the sort of 30-year window when they had the maximum risk for population growth. They actually managed to get a lid on the worst problem that they had by breaching people's civil rights to do it. Right now, we're in a position where we have no ability to act on climate because we lack all governmental intention to do so and all ability to enforce law when it comes right down to it. We have no realistic hope of regulating nanotechnology and biotechnology inside the current equilibrium. It is not clear that we are able to stop ourselves doing destructive things. And the kind of force that China used on one-child family might be the best shot we have of managing the climate process.
May I completely disagree with you? The one-child family policy was a success because of education and access to healthcare. It was a complete failure in rural areas.
One-child family overall worked, but the kind of sanctions that were put on people for having additional children ranged from being unpleasant through to downright dictatorial, depending on where you were and how it was enforced in the place you were in. But there's no denying that reaching right inside of people's family structure and telling them that they're just not allowed to have children is an astonishingly broad civil rights violation. If somebody tried that over here, we would absolutely not stand for it. And it's hard to imagine how deep an intrusion into people's personal lives that act was.
Would you hazard a guess until when there were forced sterilization in Europe?
Sweden right through to the 70s, if I remember correctly.
Slovakia until the 90s.
Slovakia until the 90s,
Until the late 90s.
The Nordic countries were abolishing it around the 80s, early 80s.
Slovakia was still sterilizing gypsy women in the late 90s.
Yeah, I mean, this Nazi stuff goes really deep in Europe.
here we go to the old colonial claiming about the white man's burden again.
All I'm saying is eugenics is a very, very solid history in Europe, and it's not surprising to see countries reverting to type on it even into the 90s.
Well, there was not a reversion, it was just a standing policy. We've managed to silence Fine, which in itself is a...
I was just waiting to see where you guys were going with this.
Well, no, but Walter is absolutely right about the one-child policy actually having been solved. The one-child policy didn't actually work. It was education and better healthcare that has been helping with that.
There's no denying in a massive violation of human rights that we're still... But by and large, it's not the explanation. And interestingly enough, China is barreling headlong a trajectory which will put them in the same place as Japan is right now.
Which is probably not a bad place to be, given that we're at 7 billion and headed for 9.
Well, you should tell that to some insurance people in Japan who are really worried about the fact that their healthcare system is going to collapse when most people are old.
But we have much worse problems in insurance, right? I mean, we're in a position where... our ability to not chew the planet up faster than it can regenerate is essentially zero. We are strip mining the world's natural resources at an astonishing rate. One of the axes that we have to act on is population. Right? All of our problems get worse the more human beings there are, and population is a completely controllable dynamic, technically. Birth control is pretty safe and pretty reliable. Getting people to use it is the hard part.
Oh, it's pretty easy. Give them access to healthcare and educate them, and they will do so.
It's like getting people to use free speech software.
How's that going? Would you want to put the fate of the world in the hands of getting 100% adoption within 50 years?
Most of the hardware that's running most of the commercial telecom systems in the world is running in one way or another on free software.
Agreed.
I mean, sure, users are by and large...
The hardware there.
Yeah, sure. The problems are hardware there and there's policy problems, but really the only place where free software is not generally being used is on user side, user land.
No, well, it's... You could really much.
I mean, this is a broad generalization, sure.
How did they go from contraception to free software?
To answer your question, yes, I do think that this is maybe not the most important, and maybe not 100% adoption rate of free software, but that people get to understand that getting back hold of technology is one of the key issues for the future of our societies. Yes, I could argue about that. And I'm not sure you would disagree.
No, I completely agree. I think that in 500 or 1,000 years, it is much more likely that Stallman will be remembered than Gandhi.
Maybe more than Steve Jobs. I don't know about Gandhi. But
I think Jobs will be completely forgotten. I think Stallman, because he's turned out to be right about almost everything.
Yes. And we discover every day that he was right so long ago. So to specify about what you said about all the hardware being mostly equipped with free software, right. First thing, there's no such thing as almost free.
No.
And you always have proprietary components. And then when you look at all the hardware that contains microcode, that is proprietary software on which we have no control at all.
Agreed.
I'm not mentioning the baseband chips, but any single Wi-Fi chip on any computer, user-grade computer that is being sold today is a closed bit of shit containing proprietary software.
I agree.
So we're very, very far from this.
I agree. I do take a fairly strong stance on these issues generally, but at the same time, I'm trying to approach this from a fairly utilitarian sense because things like dealing with the potential end of the world is actually a utilitarian issue rather than ideological.
Yes and no. Because you see with Prism, what power governments could take from controlling the technology. And this is something that is our concern, whatever the problem we want to solve, whether it's global warming or finance going cancer or whatever problem you want to take, you will need to face a government or gigantic corporation someday. And the power that is being gotten out of us by the Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple of this world is tremendous. And even us, the hackers who grew with computers between our hands, didn't see that coming with that much strength and that much importance. So
only Stallman saw it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. He saw it earlier enough, and he saw it in its full spectrum, and he told us so. Well,
To bind up, since you mentioned Prism and since Vinay mentioned nuclear holocaust and whatnot earlier, there's actually an interesting connection here, which is that nuclear bombs can be dismantled, right? There is a way to count how many nukes exist in the world. Mm. There is a way to dismantle them and observe that they have been dismantled and so on.
Frankly,
so,
if so you just stop maintaining them, they fall to pieces in about 30 years.
Right, so there is such a thing as nuclear disarmament that is actually verifiable and can be tested. And you know, in that kind of world where nukes are our biggest threat, you know, there is actually a way for us to back out of it. There is an exit strategy. Mm. But one of the things that's happened now with Prism coming out is that now we have basically a government which possesses a tool which is not enumerable. There's no way to count how many instances of that tool exist. There's no way to verify by any kind of signature that thing doesn't exist anymore. And basically that means that there's no way we can ever trust the fact that they have stopped using it, even if in the unlikely scenario where they were to come up and say that they had stopped.
Sure,
you know.
Sure.
Yeah. And basically that means that the US has absolutely no exit strategy for backing out
our own exit strategy on this one.
Sure, and I've been thinking quite a lot about this, and the only exit strategy I can think of is the United States and actually the UK as current nation state governments just ceasing to exist. Like, and this sounds very anarchistic, but really...
Once you have the technologies, Mari, somebody will pick it up.
Right. Sure.
We're not going to invent it.
Well, yeah, sure. Right. But there is a certain infrastructure requirement, and basically we need that infrastructure to cease to exist.
Well, the thing is,
this is basically bombing ourselves into the Stone Age because people are spying on us. Right. I think the approach where we actually deploy effective end-to-end crypto everywhere is a much more likely strategy.
You're really an old cipherpunk, aren't you?
Wait, well, but Vinay, well, how when was the last time you used end-to-end encryption?
Well, I mean, I don't, for very good reasons.
No, you don't. You don't use it for very bad reasons.
I don't have a secure endpoint, so anything that I'm encrypting is almost certainly leading me and the other person to a false sense.
That's just because you're using a ThinkPad. You can stop doing that.
Well, there are no secure endpoints with consumer operating systems. Yeah. There are none. Right? Not until we go back and actually do proper separation of authorities using capabilities or something like that.
Is like Android does, you mean?
That is not a capability system.
I totally see your point, and I'm desperate about the endpoints and the combination between consumer grade software and hardware. If I may,
one-time pad on Raspberry Pi using the hardware number generator really looks like a good shot to me.
Except that the Broadcom chip that Raspberry Pi uses is
but this will be this will evolve if we have one platform to work on. But my point is that we have to work towards some objective.
Yeah.
So I'm the first to say that there is no such thing as a free software system if you use, I don't know, Flash or a proprietary driver or something like this, because I see that any bit of proprietary in the free taints it.
Absolutely.
And make you lose all the benefit from using the free. But what I'm saying here is that we need here to slowly build all the components, and you mentioned excellent examples with Raspberry Pi, for instance. We need to slowly build all the components we need to achieve, I wouldn't say secure, because this word doesn't mean a thing, but a trustable sphere, a trustable bubble, a bubble in which we know we can do the best effort, state of the art, to protect our freedoms. And the thing
I think that, I mean, the reason that I mentioned one-time pad is that one-time pad is the only rational defense that we have against any mathematical or quantum computing or just, you know, vast helium-cooled, you know, superconducting supercomputers that the NSA may have. I think that the age in which it was rational to talk about security through cryptography, it's almost certainly over. And the faster we adapt to that, the less time we spend conning ourselves that our computers are secure just because we're using, RSA.
I've read Cryptonomicon, but I'm not a cryptographer myself. So I agree the one-time pads sound like a good idea. My point is, well, we could talk about the technologies.
No, the sucky SF here. This we cannot. I can only do one thing now, and that's throw in some music and start your re-education.
Stop us just when it's getting good.
I have to make a point here afterwards. But you would probably agree.
Right, we got to go after Snowden. We got to get to Snowden. Snowden's where the fun is.
Yeah, I can segue to that.
Do it. Get us to Snowden.
Oh, yeah.
Exit plan, Snowden.
We're still on.
Okay. What does Twitter have to say about our conversation? Anybody tweeting about us?
Nobody. Well, Jay Springlet came in and said just turn to on Omrop to listen to Smari and Vinay, and walked straight into a conversation about eugenics and one-child policies.
Woo!
I think he was not really expecting that.
Who was that? Was John Gilbert?
Oh, that's a friend of ours.
Jay.
What? Who?
My friend Jay.
Who? Who is that? Sorry?
My friend Jay. The one he was quoting was my friend Jay.
Oh, why?
Your friend Jay.
My friend Jay.
Okay, I didn't hear who you were speaking about. Sorry. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. You were doing well to manage during that. I hope my tent is still up.
I hope our top is still.
I hope my hotel is still up.
Ha! You wussed out and went for the hotel? Ah, man.
That's
hardly doing this right.
I think, no, actually it's on the last fumes of my bank account. But...
So, you're a lawyer.
Ben King says good timing with the dub guys.
They have a host?
Yeah.
Actually, lawyers by and large white collar slaves.
What?
I know that, yes. Yeah. You're basically at the bottom of the infernal hierarchy, and then above you, the auditors.
I'm not in a law firm, but by and large, no, it's not. If you want to get rich, I wouldn't suggest that. If you want to be evil, it could be. Doesn't beat banking in it. Snowden will return every once in a while.
But I have to make a point here. We were almost somewhere. Maybe it's just me, but
we were just veering
wildly. No, you interrupted me like a bastard. I am
a bastard.
Yes, I know.
Make the jump to Snowden.
But you.
Just let's yes. get to Snowden as fast as possible.
Give me 2 minutes.
There will be more 4 evenings more to make radio. If you
I will be too.
you were sleeping or banging some lady at Chaos Camp when we were having our epic episode.
Was I?
John Podesta, Obama advisor, is saying that the anger in Europe over PRISM is largely hypocritical.
Because we're all spying too.
Well, yeah.
Well, the Germans have admitted to being PRISM consumers, right?
Right.
Merkel turning around like, oh, we were doing that?
Oh, song.
Okay.
Back to our...
So before you interrupted me like a bastard, I was about to say...
French are glad to be interrupted.
Yes. Well, the thing is, we could talk about the technology, and this is what will be happening here for the next days. My point is what we see with the revelations of Snowden on PRISM is the design patterns of control and oppression. And they lie within the very centralized nature of the services like Google, Facebook, and the such. The fact that they do not provide end-to-end encryption because their business models based on aggregating the data and profiling the users wouldn't work with that, and based on blocking the user from understanding how the technology works through proprietary software and platforms. And I think that these are those design patterns that we need to actively fight, and this is what you were mentioning with the Raspberry Pi, the one-time pads, and whatnot, and there will be, you know, the associative internet service providers that will be presented here. There is the mesh wireless and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. I think it boils down to those design patterns that we have to fight. What lies between the Google, the Facebook, and the Macs that are the seeds for oppression. And I think this is what Snowden shows us.
They're not the design patterns. They're usability. Well, maybe if they're
design patterns. Usability.
Okay, no, it's not usability. How's the Freedom Box doing?
It's a 20 years project, if necessary. And there's so many content.
20 years.
We don't have 20 years.
It should have been a Tor node. It didn't have to do anything other than be a Tor node.
Well, we could disagree on that. It set guidelines for a number of projects that are still valid.
So let me pick something up here. 20 years ago, whenever we saw companies begin to move towards secure boot, code signing, and all the rest of this kind of stuff, we used to joke that it was the NSA in disguise.
Yeah, and we were scared to death already. You know, Stallman was already telling us.
We saw Microsoft kind of drift down that path, and then after Apple got big, Apple began to drift down that path. And eventually what we discover is it really is the NSA. What's happening is that some guy is with a national security letter goes to the chief executive officer and says, look, we need you to move your company towards secure boot and code signing because that's what you're going to do, and you're not going to tell anybody that you're doing it, but this is a national security matter and you're going to obey us.
Do you have evidence for that?
How could I have evidence for that? But the fact is...
You work in the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Right. But the fact is that we've seen that same drift towards the same set of technologies time after time after time, even when it was bad for companies' business. This is Mordor. This is the long arm of Sauron.
I do not disagree on the drift bit. I do disagree on the source of it.
How could we know in the age of the national security letter it's an unverifiable assertion?
It's a control paradox.
Yeah, no, I'm going to say I completely agree with what Jeremy is saying about having to get rid of the evil design patterns. I disagree with him on the usability bit because, frankly, most people are never going to use crypto unless we figure out a way to make crypto easy. But I'm going to have to disagree with the entire idea of us having to build the perfect system right now. Reality is that security is not going to be absolute. We cannot be absolutist about security. We're going to have to understand that security at the end of the day is economics. And the NSA, large and unfilled a check as they do have, is still bound by the laws of there just not being a lot of an endless supply of compute in the world. So what we need to do is get enough crypto into the hands of enough people so that just the reality of being them and operating things like PRISM is going to be unrealistic in some scale. That means that we should be aiming for the low-hanging fruit. We need to replace systems like Facebook, because, come on, it's really low-hanging fruit. Basically, the hard bit there is the network effect, and that's where...
The network bit as being a low-hanging fruit and a network effect in a single sentence.
Fair enough. Let's back out of that one and talk about something like, say, Gmail or Skype.
Let me throw in a different angle on this. Yeah. So one of the things that we could implement relatively easily would be essentially a crypto firewall that just blocks all outgoing communication from your computer that is not encrypted using a known good protocol.
Right.
And I think that...
Like the ghetto box from Jaromil.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. But who would use it besides us?
Well, I think the point is that you could... What we're lacking right now is a way to educate people about the issues. And having something that shows you every time an unencrypted connection goes out and suggests the software you could have used to actually encrypt that signal.
Oh, will be so enticing.
No, really. I've spent the last 3 years trying to educate people on this, teaching journalists in particular, journalists who work in high-risk zones. And really, they nod and they agree generally that they should be doing this, and then they go back out into the field and they don't.
The question is not only about the journalist you met yesterday or the journalist of today. It is really what we're... planning for the future, I think. And if I remember,
I was not talking about journalists, about humans. No,
I know. But if I remember when I was in 95 in the courtyard of my school, speaking about the internet with the three other nerds in the whole school were connected to it. Most of people told us, it's complicated. And eventually, 5 years after, every one of them was connected to the internet. We've seen those cycles. You had computers when most people thought computers were like meh, whatever, and then everybody got a computer in their pocket. Those are cycles. So we have to think forward on that, and we need the technology. Means we have to build it. We know we stand for universal values that are the sharing of knowledge, the openness of technology, mastering the technology instead of being controlled by it. Mm-hmm. So we have to run for it, and we should not wait that there's a shiny interface with round corners and the such to be perfect before we do it. We have to build all the bricks.
There's a design paradigm issue there, which is that the goal of companies like Apple has always been to reduce the computer to an appliance, a toaster, an effective toaster that sits in your kitchen and looks pretty and does vaguely what you describe to it. We need to get people to reject that as a design paradigm and move to. And actually, one of the things that might be coming out of all of this stuff with the revelations about Prism and whatnot is, a slightly more aware public that might want to be, and I've seen this. A lot of people are actually moving towards crypto now. A lot of people who didn't choose crypto 3 months ago.
There will be more revelations and there will be more understanding, and we should work for it.
I mean, this is where we come around full circle, right? Because the only reason that we know anything about the NSA's operations right now is Snowden. And Snowden is very potentially the next Manning.
And Thomas Rake, right? And Bill Biney.
But, we've just seen, Manning very likely get crucified, right? In all probability, he's going to get 100 years in jail, end of discussion.
He will go free someday.
We'll see what happens.
We may be alive this day, but he will go free someday.
Well, I mean, Nelson Mandela, etc.
There's also the appeals process, but let's, see that when it happens.
Nonetheless, right?
It should work for him.
There's a big wooden plank and a handful of nails, and Snowden's name is next on the list. So one of the problems that we have here is that, what Snowden revealed finally was solid evidence that we're living in a condition where there is more monitoring in our lives than there was in the life of Winston Smith in 1984. Because Winston Smith did not carry a view screen around in his bloody pocket. Right?
Yep. Well, it's much worse, actually.
It is much worse. And we've crossed into a completely new domain that we've got very little social reaction to. Like, people are still not really aware that their screens are watching them.
No, very generally,
it's even worse, because you'll have no idea. Well, maybe you do, and a few people around here do, but if you look at tracking cookies, online tracking, what you read, basically what you can do is calculate how long you've been watching at what web page. Most e-readers a great keep track of what you've been reading. I'm waiting for the next conviction of a Muslim fundamentalist for reading certain surahs of the Quran too often.
And then what happens is that all of that tracking information gets sucked into the NSA, along with all the credit card information and all of the information from some set of cameras.
And then you send the location data from your
And then you send a drone.
So one of the things is that we haven't gone through the psychological process of accepting that we now live in a condition which is more repressive than 1984 as far as monitoring goes. Like, every time I look at my computer screen right now, I imagine a little eye inside of it looking back at me. Yeah. And that practice of actually trying to make myself fully aware of what the device is,
it's your third
it's
eye.
It's not a computer, it's not a piece of paper, it's a monitoring device that gives me some software to run.
And once again, Stallman was right. I saw him 2 years ago, and somebody got an iPhone from his pocket and asked stupidly to take a picture. And I thought Stallman would shout at him. But he had his little grin on the face and said, "Oh, I see you are using a spy phone."
Oh, I call my iPhone's name is a tracking device with communications capabilities.
But actually, the thing that's really annoyed me recently is the fact that we, the tech politics, blah blah, whatever, net politics, blah community, you know, the people who are doing this on a day to day basis, have not been addressing what we could call the empowerment gap. The fact that a lot of people are seeing this on TV now, they're seeing that, oh, the NSA is spying on 2 billion people, roughly, you know, every human that has an internet connection. And most people are going like, oh, shit, that really sucks. I wonder what's on the other channel. Because, you know, there's no effective thing that the public can do.
In the last 10 years, you've seen those, you know... free software user groups, hacker spaces, crypto parties, sprouting.
About less than 1% of the population.
Nazis started with less than 1% of the population.
Yeah, exactly. There's something starting and
so
growing.
So did the communists.
This is an interesting way of got winning the conversation, by the way.
It's a novel way. Just because it's small doesn't mean it won't grow.
Exactly, it is growing. Right. It is growing. That's just my point.
Right. One of the problems is that we still don't really understand why the NSA is doing this.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You know, we can't have a rational...
It's very simple.
Is it?
Yes.
Sure.
Again, control and full security. Every time something happens, people are screaming on top of their lungs, why didn't you connect the dots?
Look, the American...
The pretty logical response by a group that is has been part of the military-industrial surveillance complex for half a century has basically... almost unlimited financial means.
Let me finish.
Have me shouted at several times, why didn't you see this coming? Their natural response is, given the resources at hand, the poor institutional concept of privacy as a constitutional right, is if we are to connect all the dots, let's first collect all the dots. Then we can look at connecting them later on.
The NSA doesn't give a fuck about car bombs. Right, I mean, you're dealing with institutions which were made for dealing with total nuclear war, you know, thermonuclear annihilation of the world. They don't give a shit about car bombs.
I have a theory. I've seen recently one of those movies from the Prelinger collection on archive.org that I think was from 57 or 60 or something, like Cold War style, where they were presenting a computer. And the computer was used by the militaries to protect against evil. And what they were showing on those simulated screen of the computer was trajectories of planes and missiles. And the voiceover literally says, "With this, we can predict the future." And I think you still have some crack jobs here and there who sell to those institutions that with enough data, enough knowledge, enough power, enough control, they will ultimately be able to predict the future, predict whenever a bomb will detonate or things like this.
This actually smells to me like a really worthwhile direction to think in. Because I guarantee that at some level in the institution, you come across a rational guy who's in charge of a large department who's got a model for why they're doing this.
Yeah.
Right? My guess is that they're doing it because they're trying to build a layer of defense against bioterrorism and nanotechnology. Nanoweapons.
Because they're your pet peeves.
Well, they became my pet peeves because of what I saw when I started to get close to the way that military people thought about the world.
right? I learned an enormous amount about what can go wrong in life from talking to people in the military doing things like disaster
from
management.
People afraid, actually.
Well, like, from people aware.
Yeah, but you know what? I think the main... We are brought into this war on terror for so many years, you know, and terrorist, you know?
You pronounce it with three R's, like
George Bush did. Terrorists. But
Jeremy, the military are not the types who are on war on terror.
My point here is that the problem is with people being terrorized, not with terrorists.
Yes. I mean, look, well,
the problem is the fear.
If the American public were not selectively trained to ignore gun violence and selectively trained to freak out about bombs.
One bomb detonating every 15 years, you know?
Right.
And guns detonating every few seconds.
I just don't think that you know, the military's concerns with bioterrorism or whatever, you know, is actually a reason for any of this. You know, if you look at the key motivation, it is the fact that they have a blank check and they really want to use it. And people are showing up every single day saying, hey, we would like a huge chunk of money from you and we can build you something with lots of fancy acronyms in it. And it'll work really badly, but, you know, you'll pay for it and it'll be fun.
So the contractants is a good way to explain it as well.
This is why I really want to see more of Snowden's documents. Because I don't know whether, right? The NSA's internal model could be that it's basically an enormous cash cow for defense contractors. It could be that they're trying to build a defense against future nanotechnology and biotechnology used as weapons. It could be that they've all gone stark raving mad and they're attempting to hunt down the remaining vampires in the human population.
Is it when we speak about Fox IT now?
Since you bring up vampires, look, one thing I
it's 1984 by Hypnosis from their album 1984. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back tomorrow evening at 10.
That's a good one.
The General Electric Vampires movie.
I was going to go into credible reason.
That was fun. Thank you, guys.
Hey, have you watched the General Electric Vampires movie?
I have no. Those wet socks again. Oh, shit. I feel like I'm going to...
Yes.
I pronounce everything as sex. I should know it by now.
Yeah, hierachter.
Is it still raining outside?
No, it's quite dry now.
Cool, wow.
Do one of you mind if you're on the camera?
Say again?